Sorry to interrupt all the fun. I'd like to call the Commerce and Labor Committee to order. And I'd like to move approval of the minutes. Representative Cy Tao has spent quite a bit of time looking at the minutes. And do you move the minutes, Representative?
So
Representative Tao moves the minutes.
So
any questions?
The Vice Chair.
Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes have been adopted. The chairman is elsewhere, so you're stuck with me for a few minutes. And
just like that, my whole first term, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I was stuck next to you.
Representative Winkler, the chair will move House File 2754 and to the House floor. I've had a few minutes to talk to the minority caucus, and we've allowed 3 hours to your bill, sir. So,
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that this can go straight to the general register since there is a financial impact. I think it has to go to the state government finance division of the finance committee.
So, we'll send that to finance, and we'll adjust accordingly.
Oh, good. I'd feel bad.
Go ahead, Representative Winkler.
I'd feel bad if I didn't have another committee to go to. Mr. Chair, members, this bill contains two very small changes to filing fees. Mr. Black here can answer questions. He's got a nifty handout to make the point. And the first section essentially changes the filing, automatic filing, for business trusts, and the reason is that it would cost more to program the system to accept this than it would that they would ever collect in fees. And the second section changes language in statute that allowed them to charge 15 cents per folio, which was written in the 1905 law, and nobody knows what that is.
Go ahead and state your name for the record, please. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Bert Black. I'm the legal advisor for the Office of the Secretary of State. And Representative Winkler has summarized the bill very concisely. If you look at the handout, there are two handouts that are coming around. There's one handout which is a bill summary which explains last year on the Section 1 elimination of the business trust fee, we received 11 of these filings. We collected $1,250. We've talked to our computer programmers. They tell me that in our, if we were to put this into our new Minnesota Business and Lien system, it would cost us $40,000 to program for something that takes in $1,200 to $1,500 a year. We can, if we eliminate the fee, we can take these documents in our official documents file, which is already set up to take any number of various different documents, but doesn't deal with fees. So we'd like to eliminate the fee on these business trusts. And again, on Section 2, a folio is 100 words. We're allowed to charge for non-resident service of process appointments 15 cents per folio. I am a licensed attorney, and I am sometimes accused of being paid by the word. But here's a real example of that. 15 cents per folio. Again, to program this very archaic fee. By the way, 15 cents in 1905 would be roughly 26 times that today. So what is that? I guess I hadn't done the math before I got here, but it's still not a lot. To program this very odd fee would also be a very large expense. There is a similar provision in 303.25 for which the fee is $50. That's the right fee for the service that we're providing here. And moreover, nobody's ever going to pay this because we haven't had a filing under this section since 2005. And we aren't expecting it. So, but we do need to change this law to save our having to program these dollars. And Mr. Chairman and members, I hope this passes for the comic relief portion of today's meeting.
Thank you very much, Mr. Black. Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, a question for Mr. Black. I noticed in the handout on the revised laws of Minnesota 1905 that the enactment date on what's now Section 2 at that point was March 1st. I don't notice an enactment date on this. Are you staying with the March 1st date or going with something else?
I think,
Mr. Black.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dabney, I think we'll stick with the, since this is probably going to wind up in a money bill with the July 1st. Thank you very much, though, for the asking.
Good question. Any other questions?
I'll pass. That's what I was going to ask.
Any final comments, Representative Winkler?
No, Mr. Chair, other than I just thought this would be the kind of hard-hitting committee that could handle a tough, controversial bill like this.
Are you the reason that we have a full crowd here today? Is this... With that, the chair renews his motion that House File 2754 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the House or to Finance. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Sure. Aye.
Those opposed? Boy, that was amazing. Passes. Thank you, Mr. Representative Winkler and Mr. Black. Representative Doty? The chair moves that House File 2818 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. I believe that to be the case. Representative Doty, go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm getting ready for the parade in my hometown on Platte River Days just before the turtle races, and the chair of our local gaming committee comes over to me and he says, look at this fire truck. He said, it's probably the last one we'll be able to get off of our scratch-offs. And so we had a chat about the impact of taxing on charitable gaming revenue. I got to thinking about that, and almost every ball field I played on in my district, the golf course that I spent most of my time on, the sidewalks in some areas that we walk in almost, paid for by charitable gaming funds. And the further we get out into rural Minnesota, I think probably the bigger percentage of that is true. And so in trying to figure out what to do about this, since most of what they're doing seem to be functions that would otherwise be expenses of local government, here's the simple idea. If the charitable gaming funds are being used for something that would otherwise be a function of local government, then we are going to give them their taxes back. And that is basically the bill. And it has a sunset of 2013 to give it a try. And I would, at this time, like King Wilson, to give you a few statistics, hopefully, on how bad things really are out there to put this in perspective.
Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is King Wilson. I'm the executive director of Allied Charities of Minnesota, which is the trade organization representing licensed charitable gambling organizations. You know, I think as many of you know, charitable gambling is a big business in the state of Minnesota. At our high point, we were about $1.4 billion. Fiscal 09, we were just above $1 billion. My guess is as we get to the end of this fiscal year, for the first time in a long time, we'll be below $1 billion. More unfortunate is when we look at the bottom line, the contributions that charities have made over the years. The high point we had was $100 million. Last year we were around $42 million. Basically, the dollar figure we were at last year for lawful purpose contributions was less than where we were in 1986. And we have done some initiatives over the last few years trying to reduce taxes, our electronic bingo bill that hopefully will be heard in this committee in the near future. You know, we've always been looking to do things to increase our revenue so that we would have more money for our bottom line. And when Representative Doty threw this bill in the hopper last week, it was based on the story he just told you. I saw it and said, you know, this is really a brilliant idea, because I think a large portion of monies raised by charitable gambling goes to the local city, goes to the local high school, whether it goes directly to them or is paid on their behalf. You know, there are different ways to do that. And anything we can do that would allow organizations to have more monies to spend on these local projects would be beneficial. And this is a very novel but, I think, interesting approach that at a time when we probably have as much need from our local communities, including our local governments. Unfortunately, charitable gambling organizations have the least amount of money they've had in years, and this bill would be something that would certainly help that situation, and it's something that we strongly support.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. We have a question. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Doty. I understand this is not a finance committee, but I also serve on the tax committee, and it's not a very friendly place right now. What would be an estimate
right now
for, and I know this is not the finance committee, but is there anyone that could give just an idea as to what this would cost the general fund?
Representative Doty.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I asked research that question immediately, and the answer was $8.3 million, which is why I want to start in a friendly committee like this first and hope that somebody has a good idea where we're going to get $8.3 million in a year like this, because I know what the tax committee is going to say. If this bill doesn't happen today, then I think very shortly after we find $8.3 million would be the right time, because I think it's a good idea for a lot of reasons that are essential to small-town Minnesota especially, but many other parts of the state as well. And so 8.3, I did not bother to do the official fiscal note, because when I got that number, they told me that would be the number on the official fiscal note, but you know what's going to happen with that number as well as I do.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like the idea. I think it's a great idea. I just don't know. Well, this is the policy committee, and it's a great idea.
Chair Atkins, did you have a?
I agree.
Oh, I think
great idea.
Representative Anzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To either of the two gentlemen there, you mentioned lawful purpose. Contributions total about $42 million annually. The other number that it would be good for the committee to know is what is the amount of the combined receipts tax paid to the state of Minnesota by the licensed charitable organizations?
Mr.
Wilson.
Representative Anzell, so before I came up, my good friend Mr. Barrett from the Gambling Control Board lent me his annual report of the Gambling Control Board. So looking at fiscal 2009, state gambling taxes paid by Minnesota nonprofit tax-exempt organizations is $37,844,000. Of that, the combined receipts tax is $19,905. The bingo tax is $1,912,000. And the pull tab tip or tax is $16,027,000. So that's the makeup of the $37 million paid by nonprofit tax-exempt organizations.
Follow up, please.
Representative Vanza.
So in aggregate, the amount of taxes that our charitable organizations and our local communities are paying is almost equal to the lawful purpose contributions that they're able to make back into the community for worthwhile programs. So this has great merit. I just don't know how you pay for it.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Wilson,
to that and Representative Davids, the bill that Chair Atkins signed on as an author, we're updating our electronic link bingo that we had in front of this committee, I believe, two times last year. Within that bill, we have some tax reform and relief, but that the electronic link bingo does raise implementation the first year, because we'd only probably have it up and running for half a year, is about $6 million. The second year is $12 million. We have an offset with a recommendation on how to do some tax relief. However, we are very open to other ideas, and so we are willing to bring to the table a new revenue source within our existing games by taking something we already have, which is bingo, link bingo, and electronic bingo devices, putting them together, and we think that will generate some additional dollars, and we could do some revenue neutrality, how we get there, whether it's this idea or another idea, but there is some new money that we are planning to bring to the table, and where we go from there, I'm not sure, but there are some things that can be done within the current charitable gambling world realm with just a few little minor tweaks.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Representative Doty, is there money to be made on these turtle races that you're talking about?
I can show you which building you can go behind to place that kind of bet if you're up there. Officially, no. These are for children and But some of those turtles, I understand, have a special diet, Mr. Chair, before that. And if you know which turtles, that's the one to put your money on.
Interesting.
Tastes like chicken.
Tastes. Any final questions?
So it's good for agriculture.
Very good.
Seeing none, with that, the chair renews his motion that House File 2750, whoops, I'm on the wrong one here. 2818 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Your bill is on your way, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Chair Atkins?
You can stay.
Absolutely. Under my wing.
I'm religious so
Chair Atkins, we have a couple bills on the agenda.
We start with 2902, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Thank you. I'd move that House File 2902 be recommended pass and referred to the General Register. Is there anybody else that I looked at the staff book? Is it going to the floor? Okay. That would be my motion, Mr. Chair.
To civil law. Civil.
Okay. I'd
bless you.
Well,
civil
when I renew
justice.
My motion, I will go to civil law. As this committee is very familiar with, in the last several months, we've had a couple hearings with respect to auto dealers and the wind down agreements that certain manufacturers have forced upon them. I was going to say never in my time here in the legislature, but I don't think at any time in my adult life. Have I seen such a trampling of personal property rights as I have seen in the last year with respect to wind-down agreements of auto dealers here in Minnesota and across the country by certain manufacturers. What we have before you today would change Minnesota's franchise law to strengthen those rights that auto dealers have. We found out just how fragile those situations are that auto dealers are currently in, and it's not just about the owners of those auto dealerships, it's about all those people that work there and all those families that rely upon those jobs. I had a chance to visit Lee and Karen Carlson's place up in Anoka, Maine Motors. There's 80 families, I believe, that rely on the jobs that are there, and they're good jobs. You can support a family, you can put a kid through school, make a mortgage payment with those jobs. I won't belabor it, but what this bill does is give additional rights to those franchise auto dealers in the event that a manufacturer comes along that wants to do something different. The chief things that it does is, number one, if they do wind you down and then they want to open up in that same territory where you're doing business currently, they got to give you a first shot at it, and that lasts for 4 years. Secondly, is if you put a bunch of dough into your dealership, it gives you certain rights as to how you're going to use that. Right now, the manufacturers put you under their thumb, and they tell you exactly what you can do and what you can't do on your own property. There's several points, a couple of which clarifies that a reasonable dealership facilities of a manufacturer does not mean a manufacturer can demand the exclusive use of the dealer's facility. Right now, some manufacturers think they can do that. There's several pieces of it, but one is, you know, sometimes they demand upgrades, or you make upgrades, and then they wind you down. So this says that if they wind you down or attempt to wind you down within 2 years, they've got to reimburse you for those upgrades. And then finally, it allows the dealer some input into the manufacturer's performance standards, and we found out just how important those are with respect to the wind-down agreements that have come before us the last several months. The bottom line is it gives, I still don't think it puts auto dealers on equal footing with manufacturers, but rather than being like this, it maybe moves it to like this. And we ought to do that for those Minnesota auto dealers and all the nice people that work there. And with that, I'd be happy. We've got experts in a room, but I'd also be happy to answer any questions you may have or concerns.
Thank you, Chair Atkins. Any questions for the author of the bill? Is there anybody in the audience or that'd like to be heard for or against this bill? Perhaps you'd like to. Whoops.
Whoops.
Please state your name for the record and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Mr. Chair, I'll be brief. My name is Sandy Nairn. I'm with Messerly & Kramer, and I'm here on behalf of the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, which is a trade association of 10 of the largest world's car manufacturers. I'm not going to go into detail at this point. We have opened up a really good dialogue with the dealers on their proposal and hope to meet with them over the next few weeks and work out a compromise on most of the major points. So I want to thank the author for his willingness to work with us and the dealers also. There are a number of provisions in this bill that I think will be easy to compromise. There'll be a couple more that will be a little bit more difficult. Most of them are within the jurisdiction of Civil Law Committee. They're legal issues dealing with provisions that create new causes of action. They deal with burdens of proof, and there are some provisions in here that actually are being constitutionally challenged in a few other states. But I at least wanted to go on the record and let the committee know we are hopeful to work everything out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chair Atkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2902 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Civil Law.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? With that, it's passed, and bless you. We have Chair Mulry here, and, you know, it's a special special task before you there. Chair Atkins, to your
chair.
Representative Mulry.
Oh, here we go.
Wait till he, Mr. Chair. The Civil Law Committee has passed more bills than any policy committee for three straight years.
And we haven't passed any of those bills.
Hopefully they'll add one more when I get there.
Chair Atkins, to your next bill, sir.
Move House File 2856. Be recommended to pass and referred to
General Register, sir.
To the General Register.
I understand there's an amendment.
There is. It's an oral amendment, folks, and it is on lines 2.6 and 2.7 of the bill, and it would reinstate the stricken language. And that will then put it in the shape with which we'd like to proceed.
Any questions to the oral amendment? Does anybody need it restated? Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What does it actually do? It changes from what to what?
It's a secret.
Chair Atkins.
This is language right now. There was and is a current requirement that at least 15 of your 30 credits, your continuing ed credits, need to be completed in the first of the two-year cycles. Under the bill, that would be eliminated, and all of the credits could come in at any time during the period of time that you are required to report.
Representative Davids.
There was some miscommunication. It was sense that the department may want that language stricken. The department, as we understand it, had a sense that the realtors want that language stricken. Nobody apparently wanted that language stricken. And it had an unintended consequences, frankly, for the Kaplan people that do provide these educational programs, with the concern being, just like any good lawyer, I always wait till the very end to get my CLE credits. I'm sure you would never do that, Representative Davids, because you don't procrastinate.
Yeah.
But what this would probably cause, if this requirement was gone, is that rather than taking your credits over the course of time and staying up to date on how things work, is everybody would wait until the very end and take them all at one time. And so this allows for it to just continue to work the way it's been working in the past, and seems to be working just fine, and therefore nobody wants to change it in spite of the language that was desired to be stricken. We're now unstriking the stricken language.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't understand anything he just said.
Chair Atkins, would you like to start from the beginning of that?
No, I guess.
No.
I'll do it once more.
Okay.
With passion.
I was top of my class, a very small class. But the question is this. So by doing what you're suggesting that we do, they could take all 30 credits the second year?
Chair Atkins.
Under the current, let's break it into two pieces. Under current law, they have to take at least 15 of their 30 credits in the first year, and then the balance in the second year. Okay? That's current law.
You, Mr. Chair, you could take all 30 the first year.
You could.
Okay.
Under the proposed change in the bill, this would allow you to wait until the very end and take them all at one time. And what we figured out was that nobody actually wants to make that change, in spite of it being in this bill. There was kind of a misunderstanding about the department wanted the change, and they say they didn't want it, and they thought the realtors did. They didn't want it. And so we decided, rather than make a change that nobody wants, we'll just not make that change.
So Mr. Chair, by adding this amendment, it would make it so you still have to have 15 the first year.
Yep.
That's a good thing. I ran on this.
I've actually, Mr. Chair, I've Representative Davids, I've Chair. Already designed my campaign flyer for this year, and it's in there.
Perhaps you could get a copy of that for the committee.
Yeah, I'll pass out my campaign flyer so y'all can incorporate that into your flyers as well.
Chair Atkins, so any questions to the oral amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment, oral amendment adopted. I understand you have another written amendment, A2?
Yes, I do. I have the A2 amendment, and this just, it's more of a technical change. You'll see it in your packets. Change was one date from May 31st to April 1st, and then talks about when the certain requirements are and the module training being required. We'll explain it as we go through the bill, but at least this one was in writing, so I'll move the A2 amendment.
Any questions in regards to that amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's adopted. We have your bill before us as amended. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. And I can explain the bill myself, but as long as I have expert testimony next to me, I think I'll turn it over to Ms. Berger from the Minnesota Realtors. The essence of the bill, though, is that working with the realtors, they've desired to enhance the professional qualifications of realtors. Relative to continuing education and their broker license requirements. This is not forcing anything upon them that they don't want for themselves. They've been working on this for a considerable amount of time, and it's my understanding I've not heard any opposition to it from any current realtor, and it appears to be something that will enhance the profession. And with that, I will turn it over to Ms. Berger.
Thank you, Ms. Berger. Please go ahead when you're ready. State your name, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christine Berger, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors. Thank you for the opportunity to make a few comments about this important piece of legislation for us. As Chair Atkins pointed out properly, this is a bill that we heard a calling from our industry, from our membership at the association, that they would like to improve professionalism and further improve professionalism in our association and our industry. There's a difference between just being a real estate licensee and being a realtor. The difference is that realtors abide by a code of ethics. This bill does apply to all real estate licensees, and it just says that we're going to increase their professionalism by continuing education. And so the bill creates modules on hot and current industry topics. Now, the bill doesn't actually say hot, but that's how I like to phrase it. And anyways, on current and significant topics in the real estate market that everyone should really be knowledgeable about and have the best information at hand when transacting. And so it creates the modules. There will be a test on the module. This is to ensure that people are paying attention, that they are not playing with their BlackBerry or cell phone or reading the newspaper during the course. And then it also increases the number of years it takes to become a broker. Under current law, you need 2 years of experience as a salesperson licensee in order to get your broker's license. This would increase it just by one more year. And the reason we're increasing it to 3 years is because brokers are really on the front line. They are the supervisor in the office, so to say, and they need to have a lot of information about transactional forms and risk management. And so they need to have a lot of experience under the belts. This gives them more experience. And then we're also asking the brokers to take a one-hour class on broker-related issues, and those would be things on, again, the transactional forms, office management, risk management, those types of important things. So those are kind of the components of the bill. And like I said, we strongly believe, and our membership and association believes, that this is a great way to bring all licensees to the same standard. If this, an example of what a hot and current topic would be is if you had, if we'd done this a few years ago, we would have had all licensees in the state take a class on short sales and foreclosures, and how helpful that would have been if all licensees in the state would have had this course so they know the laws, rules, and regulations and practice tips and working with lenders on foreclosure and short sale issues. So we really ask for your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Berger. Chair Atkins?
All I got, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for the author? Any?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Davids.
Mr. Chair, I would move to amend on page 3, line 3.27, after cover, insert hot.
We'll take that as a friendly amendment, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I rescind my
vote. Yeah, I withdraw my support. You all right?
almost.
And are you aware of anybody that would like to be heard for or against this bill? Other?
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berger. Please state your name for the record, sir, and go ahead when you're ready.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Coyne.
You can stand if it's going to be brief.
It will be brief. And
please sit.
I represent Kaplan Educational Services. We are the largest provider of education for real estate agents in the state of Minnesota. We've been doing education in our state for more than 30 years, and I personally have been involved in that education for about that long. I want to speak in favor of this bill. I don't have to waste your time telling you that we're in one of the largest housing crises that we've seen in our lifetime. And what this bill does is it answers the question, can we do better? We think that we can. And so I'm very proud of the work that the Minnesota Association of Realtors have done and of the work that the Department of Commerce have done to say, how can we do better? What this bill is going to do, it's going to allow us to distribute information more quickly. It's going to allow us to distribute information that we know is really critical to agents. And ultimately, it's going to be good for people who buy and sell in Minnesota. So it's good public policy. I hope you'll vote for it.
Please sit for a second, sir. I believe we have a question. Sorry. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what was your last name again?
Coyne.
Mr. Coyne. Mr. Coyne, on page 4, lines 4.11, it says written test for successful completion of a module. So they've already passed their real estate test. They've already done a lot of stuff. Now they have to have more tests. In the insurance world, there's this thing called Part D Medicare coverage that came about. And they had the brilliant idea that we would have 6 modules and some tests that are harder than usual. And what we found was that a large percentage of the agents that covered Part D have dropped their Part D license and their Medicare supplement licenses because they can't pass the test. You have to have a 90% to pass. And being borderline genius as I am, I did pass. But it was a bear. It was awful. It took 2 days, 6 modules, and we get paid $2 for the policies that we sell. Now, a lot of agents that are supposed to be out there helping senior citizens on that don't do it anymore. They say, we're not doing this. This is insanity. What is your definition of written test for successful completion of a module?
Representative Davids, I can tell you that test is the strongest word I've heard in any of the discussion to describe what we're actually going to do. I think this really comes down more to the level of a quiz. And so the idea is that people aren't text messaging, that they're paying attention, not reading newspapers when we cover this information. They are going educators are going to be asked to pick from a bank of questions that that will be developed by the department, and the pass rate will be set by the department. And so I'm imagining that this is a 10-question quiz, and they need to answer 7 of those 10 questions correctly. It also will allow us to confirm that people online have in fact picked up the information that they need to pick up. So this is not intended to be something that will prevent people from continuing to be in real estate.
So Mr. Chair and Mr. Coyne, so you could do this test online?
If you take the course online, yes.
okay, I know some smart realtor. Okay, that'll be okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Coyne.
Thanks.
Chair Atkins, any final comments to your bill? Would you like to
remove
your bill as amended?
I'll renew my motion that House File 2856 be recommended pass and referred to the House floor as amended.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Your bill is on the way, sir.
Thank you.
Chair Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In an effort to secure Representative David's support of my final bill, I have, I guess it's Senate File 1778. It is a resolution. I would move Senate File 1778 be recommended to pass and refer to the House floor.
The Chair has moved the bill. We have it before us.
And what it does, and hopefully I've given my friend Representative Davids and former Chair of the Commerce Committee an opportunity to take a look at this, as well as other members. But this is something that Chairman Davids, I know, strongly believes in, as does Chair Scheid. There is an effort underway at the federal level to take over the oversight of insurance companies from the states. The one thing that has worked well in all this morass in the last several years is that states have successfully continued to oversee insurance companies. To allow the federal government to insert itself into this effort will do one of two things. Either create a labyrinth of regulations from both the states and the feds that no insurance company wants to have to deal with, or take it over from the states, which is crazy, because we've got a strong record of success with respect to doing it. We've got a very good working relationship between our department and those insurers that that do business here in Minnesota. And you don't mess with what works, and we've seen sometimes what happens when the feds take over oversight of certain things. I would point out AIG, if you use that as an example, their financial stuff, which was regulated by the feds, melted down in a big bad way. All of their insurance, however, which is regulated by the states, remains sound. If that's not enough of a poignant tell-to-tale, then I don't know what is. But with that, I would appreciate your support for that resolution. It has already passed the Senate, I believe, by a very wide margin. And the commissioner, Commissioner Wilson, actually brought this to me. He was unable to attend today, but he certainly strongly supports it, as do I, and I'm sure many others. And with that, I'd appreciate your support.
Any questions for the author? Anyone in the audience like to be heard for or against? Representative Davids.
Mr. Chair, a question for Mr. Pender. Mr. Pender, I strongly support this resolution. I've always been a states' rights person on this, and if you just follow the money, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars here that could go right out the door. Does this in any way affect Rule 151A on index contracts being taken over by the SEC?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I don't see how it could. I don't see how it does.
Representative Davids.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Atkins, would you like to renew your motion?
I would. I'd renew my motion that Senate File 1778 be recommended pass and referred to the House floor.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? You're on your way, sir.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Should we move to adjourn?
Mr. Chair, would a move to adjourn be in order?
I think that'd be fine, Mr. Representative Hoppe. Well, I guess we probably should hear Representative Lilly's bill. We're playing a little musical chairs today. We've got Representative Lilly's bill, which is House File 978. Representative Lilly moves that House File 978 be recommended to pass and referred to the House floor. And I would remind folks, this came back to us as a result of Rule 4.20. We heard this bill. We took testimony last time around. Bills that didn't get off the House floor automatically returned to the committee that they originated in. My sense or my expectation is that we will take very brief comments from the author, a couple minutes worth of testimony, and then the bill will be taken back to the House floor where it belongs. But with that, Representative Lilly, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Quite honestly, I really wasn't aware of House Rule 4.20, but I'm happy to play. We passed this last year and sent it onto the House floor. And the other day, I was listening to the governor's speech, and he wanted to know that from real business owners, and I have one next to me here, and she's available, Lametti's repair shop, and they own quite a few different locations. But if she's available here, if we need any comments or questions answered.
Okay. If you don't mind, will you just give a brief essence of what the bill does? It's my understanding that it impacts who can own a auto body shop here in Minnesota and do repairs and so forth.
Thank you, Chair and members. What it is essentially prohibits insurance companies from owning auto body repair shops. One of the problems is it's and isn't currently happening in Minnesota, but it is around the country, where insurance companies get in the business of owning repair shops. And so it's a little bit of the big business versus a little business on the main street, if you will. And what they do is they can, the fear is that they can do some perhaps directing some of the customers. You go in with your insurance claim and they send it right to their folks. And so it's kind of an uncompetitive advantage is kind of the fear for our local small town, smaller businesses trying to do auto repair. So that's kind of briefly, and I think it's a good bill and pretty straightforward. So.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Ms. Lametti, what concern do you have about an insurance company owning a auto body shop?
Mr. Chair, my name is Joanne Lametti. I'm the owner of Lametti's Collision. We have 6 locations in the metro area. The concern that we have is the insurance. It's the fox guarding the hen house. The insurance company is paying for the repair and directing the repair manners, the replacement parts, the thoroughness of the repair. By law, consumers are entitled to have their vehicles completely and safely repaired to its pre-accident condition, and this conflict of interest arises when the insurance company is paying for it. The vehicle needs to be restored to its pre-accident condition, and the customer's vehicle needs to retain its value after the repair. Most insurers are interested in doing this. However, there are circumstances where an insurance company is seeking to save money, may be less inclined to have its in-house repair facilities be as thorough in its search for needed repairs. There have been instances where insurers, even in the current market, have pressured independent repair shops to do repairs that do not meet standard guaranteed repair minimums to Minnesota consumers. Left unchecked, an insurer's desire to save money and pursue the lowest cost of repair can easily jeopardize the integrity and safety of the repair. And then another concern, of course, is the insurer-owned shops may ultimately result in consumers having fewer choices in automotive repairs, and likely the less competition will also result in higher prices to the consumer. The state of Texas passed a similar bill and several years back, which was subsequently challenged and upheld in federal court. With that behind us, they now want to bring this bill forward in order to maintain the balance which is currently exists in the repair market, a balance that has the consumer and the independent repair shops continuing their respective roles in a market that works well for everybody.
Thank you, Ms. Lametti. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm kind of confused on this. Have there been complaints that this is a problem in Minnesota, Representative Lilly? Or
Chair Atkins and Representative Davids, it's a little of it's currently not a problem. It's playing a little bit of defense, if you will. Actually, there's been a fair amount of expansion. There's been some recent information that's come out that insurance companies are kind of growing their market, if you will, in this business. So currently, is it a problem in Minnesota? No. But it certainly could be, and so it's a little bit of playing defense.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lilly, we're hearing a bill today that is going to fix something that might happen.
That's correct, sir.
Mr. Chairman, a couple more questions.
Visionary leadership.
With, I'm just thinking about this. Now, let's say you got David's Auto Body Shops, a chain of 10 fantastically profitable body shops, and Acme Insurance Company comes in and offers me a gazillion dollars to buy my shops. I can't sell it to them?
Representative Lilly?
If this would be law?
Chair Atkins and Representative Davids, I believe you. I guess I'm not certain. I don't think you can, by law, sell them to insurance company if we were to pass this. Yes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, why would we do that? Why would we say David's Body Shops has a good offer from some insurance company and I can't cut the deal?
Representative Lilly?
Chair Atkins and Representative Davids, you could sell it, but not to a major, you know, to an insurance company.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lilly, we just made my body shops worth less, possibly.
Possibly.
The other,
Mr. Chairman.
Well, Representative Davids, the other option, of course, is they just wouldn't do insurance in Minnesota. They could buy the auto body
well,
shop,
Chairman,
but they wouldn't be able to.
That's not a very good option if I'm the insurance company. And, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Pender, 72A, I'm trying to make sense. This makes no sense to me. 72A is referring to auto insurance.
Ms. Bender?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I guess I'd have to look to see if everything in there is auto insurance.
Well, I get, Mr. Chairman,
I know some things in 72A20 at least are auto insurance.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Pender, where is the life insurance statutes? What chapter is that? Do we know what chapter?
Mostly in Chapter 61A.
So, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Penner, then if I own a life insurance company, I can buy an auto body shop under if this legislation passed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, yes.
So that just increased the price of your auto body shop. Just so we're clear.
Unless it's AIG. Well, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We do have one more testifier, by the way.
I'll admit, I don't get it.
All right. Mr. Franzen, I know you wanted to be heard as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Franzen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Doug Franzen, and I represent Allstate Insurance, and we oppose this bill. I would ask you not to move it back to the floor. I would like to just respond to one point in previous testimony, and it's kind of an inference that an insurance company might do shoddy work to save some money if they were involved in a body shop. I think the cliche would be, penny wise, pound foolish. The civil liability that would intend to an insurer, a major insurer, cutting corners on repairs would be astronomical. To save pennies. So there is no incentive to cut corners. Our job is to get a fair price for quality work, period. But from the perspective of the body shops, and particularly the auto body chains, the national chains, I see why they support this bill. Quite bluntly, it fences out competition. It says certain people can't compete in this market. From the consumer's point of view, however, it's not so good. It limits innovation in business modeling, and it restricts competitions. So some people can compete, other people cannot. Under this bill, one person who could not compete would be Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway could not come into Minnesota and compete in the auto body business because one of their subsidiaries happens to be a property casualty insurance company. As you can guess, it's not just Allstate, it's the entire insurance property casualty industry, at least the national trades, who represent just about everybody who opposes this legislation. If I could, I do have a letter, if this could be distributed, please, from the Property Casualty Insurers of America, the American Insurance Association, and the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies, three national trade associations in opposition to this bill. Essentially, these associations represent all insurers, all auto insurers. One notable exception, though, is these associations opposing this bill do not count Allstate amongst their members. Allstate is not a member of any of these companies, and yet we have this. The question from the industry's perspective is it's interested in retaining its ability to innovate to better serve its customers. Again, what kind of message are we sending to the Minnesota marketplace? What about companies that may want to come to Minnesota, create jobs, build facilities here? Is this the kind of place they want to come? The flaws of this bill can be illustrated by a couple examples. One is real easy. You eliminate two or three words from the legislation. You eliminate auto and motor vehicle, change the statutory citation, and you've eliminated outlawed health partners from doing business in Minnesota because of their relationship with providers. I don't think there's an allegation that a doctor who works for Health Partner cuts corners and does shoddy work, and the stakes are significantly higher than offender repair. The second example is something that my partner got in the mail, bought a new Ford, which I'd highly recommend. They're great cars, good company. It was good news for this customer. He's right up there. He's the old guy with the mustache. And it said three things, really. The first thing is congratulations on being smart for buying a Ford, which is expected. Secondly, we're Ford Insurance Service. We have this affiliate company, which is banned under affiliates are banned here, who can write insurance for this new Ford cheaper than Allstate, Geico, State Farm, or Progressive. You could pay less and get more. I will submit this, Mr. Chairman. And finally, it said, boy, and if you aren't fortunate enough to get in a crash, go to a Ford dealer. They do a great job. So when we're talking about directing business, buy the car, insure it with an affiliate, and get it fixed at a dealership. Now, I don't find that offensive, Mr. Chairman. In fact, I think it's a creative business model as a choice for a consumer. Not the choice, a choice. And I think it's noteworthy that this creative company with this business model is the one major American auto manufacturer that didn't go bankrupt and hasn't looked to the government for money. This business model, they illustrate the innovation and competition are good things, and the consumer wins. The same is true for auto insurance. We believe there's a true tension between the best interest of consumers and those of the vendors, and we ask that you side with the consumers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Franzen. Representative Knuth, I'm sorry, I think you had a question earlier, but any other questions? Otherwise, Representative Sanders?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Franzen, could you touch just a little bit on some of the steering? I mean, some of the previous testimony that was brought up, basically alluded to the fact that, these insurance companies would be steering to their particular auto body shops. From my understanding, it is illegal for an insurance company to do such unless you ask them to perhaps provide a repair facility. But I don't know if you could just touch on that to be a little bit more clear on what the relationship is there and how this would affect.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Sanders. The Ford Motor Company example I gave you, you bought our car from us, take it to our dealership, that's steering. It's in a different context. Steering is simply having the auto insurer say, take it to this particular shop. This is where we want you to go. That's illegal. Minnesota has a strong consumer choice statute which prohibits steering. I will testify from firsthand knowledge with my clients. The Commerce Department investigates allegations of steering vigorously, and when they come to the determination that there's reasonable cause to believe that steering has occurred, and consumer choice has been compromised in some way, they are merciless with the companies. They charge big fines, and around the country, the reputation is that Minnesota is a particularly difficult state for insurance companies when dealing with the Commerce Department and allegations of steering. They're vigorous in their enforcement. It's illegal, and it's good that it's illegal. You have an absolute right to take your car to any repair facility you want, and we, not only Allstate, but the entire industry, is obligated by law, and we follow this law, to tell you that. Only, we cannot recommend a shop until you say, I don't care, do you have a recommendation? The consumer has to ask. But up until that time, there is no steering, no pushing, no directing one way or another. And if there is, there's great legal jeopardy that attaches to it. This bill is not about steering. It's about restricting competition.
Any other questions? Otherwise, Representative Lilly renews his motion that House File 978 be recommended to pass under 4.2N and referred back to the House floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Lilly. Thank you, Mr. Franson. Thank you, Ms. Lemaitre. Just a little bit of guidance in terms of where we're going this next week or 10 days. We added a couple bills today, and we're going to be a little bit heavier next Tuesday, and the result of that is that there will be no committee hearing this Thursday. So enjoy your time this Thursday afternoon. We'll try to keep you... As you know, we try to give as much notice as we can as to the bills that are coming on. We'll try to get out notices for as far in advance as next Thursday as well, shortly here. But we'll see you next Tuesday. With that, we stand adjourned.